Major David Katz, thank you for joining us in the studio. All right, we want to talk about, because we are talking about Yom Kippur, one of the major, major battles, certainly in the Middle East, is the Yom Kippur War. That took place in 1973, and it was a very, very difficult day in Israel's history, wasn't it?
Yeah, surely it was a horrendous period in Israeli military history. A war that was fought over 3 weeks with massive losses on both sides. And certainly it was a life-changing event for the participants and even the nations that took part in that war.
The effect of it was felt how much longer? You know, and what actually just happened? Let's start there, rather, because it did seem to take Israel by surprise, and it shouldn't have.
No, certainly. So there was a total intelligence failure on the side of the Israelis, which didn't just happen in isolation. It wasn't just totally an Israeli failure. It was an Egyptian effort to make sure that this was a surprise attack, and they were amazingly effective in concealing the day of the attack and the time of the attack. And unfortunately for the Israelis, they were very successful. So the Israelis were caught totally unaware on the day. There was a lot of subterfuge that went behind it with the Egyptians. They did practices on their side of the canal for months beforehand. And the Israelis went on standby. Every time there was a practice, the Israelis went on full alert. And eventually they got inured to the whole thing and didn't go on full alert anymore because they thought these practices would perpetuate. And the Egyptians did this type of thing going on for months and months. And they put in a hell of a lot of effort to make sure that this was a surprise attack, which they achieved amazingly well on the day and caught the Israelis totally unawares.
How long did it take Israel to regain some of its lost ground?
Well, it took Israel about a week and a half. It was a very close run context, especially on the Golan Heights when the Assyrians attacked. They overran nearly the total Golan Heights. They faced a small Israeli force that fought amazingly well and inflicted major, major casualties on the Syrians. So that was the focal point of what was happening in the whole war, because the Syrians had the ability to take over the whole of Israel at one stage. And it went down to a couple of Israeli tanks holding back the Syrian forces. So it was alarming stuff. And very bravely fought by the Israelis, very competently fought, until such times they were able to mobilize the reserves. And once the reserves started coming in, they restored the situation on the Syrian front. And then they were able to restore the situation on the Sinai front. But it was a close-run battle at times, and quite alarming.
What were the repercussions in Israel? Because this was clearly a major intelligence failure.
It was a major intelligence failure. Many heads fell. And I think to some extent, the Israelis were quite arrogant about their success in the Six-Day War. And the Egyptians used that time between the walls to work out where the Israeli weaknesses were. And the Israelis were quite, as the victors, were quite arrogant about their prowess, their military prowess. And the Egyptians worked on the Israeli weaknesses. And the Egyptians were able to show up where the Israeli weaknesses were on the day. And this had major repercussions after the war. Not only is the Israeli army, but the United States army went back to the drawing board after that and changed some of their military doctrine due to that war. So that war was a seminal event in military history. And quite a lot of armies after that went back to the drawing board to go and examine exactly what happened. Very, very important war worldwide, not only just for the Israeli military, but for the world militaries.
Yeah, and did this change the way that Israel behaved moving forward?
Yes, absolutely. Their doctrine changed to a certain extent. If I can get a little bit technical, I don't know how well that's going to go down.
So the
Israelis fielded a very unbalanced force in 1973. Even in 1967, they fielded a highly unbalanced force. Mm. There's four components that make up an army. It's the artillery, the infantry, the tanks, and the air force. And the Israelis mainly relied on their air force and their tank force for their strength, and didn't concentrate on the artillery and the infantry. And that's exactly where the Egyptians saw the weakness. And they play to the Israeli weaknesses. So in other words, they nullify the Israeli air superiority by deploying a missile system that gave them total air superiority for 15 kilometers beyond the canal line.
Wow.
So they were able to nullify one of the Israeli strengths just by deploying this amazing missile force. And then their infantry deployed what they called Sager missiles, which were the equal of the Israeli tanks. So in one fell swoop, they were able to nullify the Israeli advantages in those two fields. So the Israelis lacked artillery, which would have gone a long way to nullifying the Egyptian Sager missiles. And their air force and their infantry also would have been impervious to these anti-tank missiles. So their infantry could have been used to attack the Egyptians. So they lacked in infantry, they lacked in artillery, and the Egyptians were able to cross the canal quite cleverly using Italian high pressure water systems to take away the sandbanks on the side. So they melted away these sandbanks with the water. They came across and they formed a defensive line about 10 kilometers into the Sinai. And there they set up a defensive position and they held that defensive position, forcing the Israelis to attack them. And then they deployed their SAM missiles against the Air Force, and they deployed their Sager missiles against the Israeli tanks. And they inflicted, I can only just say, horrendous losses. The Israelis have never suffered.
What were the losses?
I can't tell you exactly, but I mean, on the first day, I think they lost something like 150 tanks, and their casualties were high, 300 just on the first day, Israeli casualties. Prisoners of war for the first time in a long time. On the Barlev line, a lot of Israelis were captured trying to defend this Barlev line. So it was a big, big blow in the first week, where the Israelis tried to counterattack and get the Egyptians back over the canal to very little effect, because they were stumped by the new missile systems and the infantry carrying these missiles.
How is the Yom Kippur War remembered today, pain, as a success? Ultimately, it was a success, but there was a lot that went on in terms of losses, in terms of failures, that can't make it a very, you know, the Six-Day War has a very different, obviously there's the memories around what could have happened, and in the graveyards that were being prepared, and the tragedy that could have been.
Yes.
But actually, the losses were not significant. The Yom Kippur War was significant.
The losses were certainly significant. I think what occurred out of this war is that both sides felt they had won the war, and they were both correct in it. The Israelis managed to turn the situation around and win a tactical and an operational victory in the Sinai, and certainly in on the Golan Heights. And they could claim a certain amount of history. And also they survived, which was in itself something to be boasted about. But the Egyptians too could claim a victory. They claimed a strategic victory. They won the strategic war by forcing the Israelis back to the negotiating table, because the Israelis were in a position prior to 1973 of not wanting to negotiate with the Egyptians. The Egyptians wanted to negotiate to get the Sinai back. So this forced the Israelis back to the negotiating table. So each side could walk out of this battle claiming a certain amount of victory. And it certainly restored the pride to the Egyptian army. And that's important from one point of view, is that they were able to sit down now at the negotiating table, having their pride restored as equal partners.
Well, it's interesting.
And look what came out of that.
You've long said that you actually need to be able to come to the table on a little bit more equal footing. Time is 8:57. Major David Katz joining us in studio. Before I let you go, I want to talk about an event that took place yesterday for the ex-servicemen. Tell us about it.
Okay, it was held by the South African Jewish Ex-Service League, and it's held every year around about this time near Yom Kippur at the South African National Jewish War Memorial, which is at West Park Cemetery. And what it's in aid of is for us to pay homage to the Jewish servicemen who died in World War One, World War Two, in the defense of South Africa generally, and also the Israeli wars. A lot of South Africans went over in 1948 to 1967 and were killed in those wars. And I attended the ceremony yesterday. It was a fantastic ceremony. And one of the speakers there was the ambassador from Israel.
Right.
And another one was Rabbi Hendler, who gave a fantastic eulogy. And it was just worthwhile being there and paying homage to these guys. And I've attended now, this is about my third or the fourth one, and it's to a diminishing crowd. So really,
I was just going to say, David, you know, it's certainly, the first I heard of it.
Yes, absolutely. Is when, so not well advertised.
When I saw your photos on Facebook yesterday,
yeah.
And then I saw the schedule that you brought in, or the program that you brought in,
yeah.
To studio, this is the first time that I've heard of it. Now,
yes, absolutely. So
I'm not a barometer, but I am pretty clued up with what's going on in community.
Yes, yes. So I've taken it upon myself now. Okay, the horse is already out of the stable.
For the
upcoming one, I encourage all people who had somebody who served in the army or served themselves in the army to come along there. I mean, we struggled yesterday to even get a minyan.
It's not
something that I want. Although in the eulogy, I mean, they spoke about as long as there's one person that remembers, it's worthwhile having the ceremony. But I would like to see hundreds of people arrive next year. So around about closer to the time next year, I'm going to be plugging this if you don't
mind. I'm going to make a suggestion right now on radio is that you move it from West Park.
You think so?
Yes. Make it accessible to people. Make it easier for people to get to. When you're asking people on a Sunday and lots of roads were closed yesterday because of there was a raid.
Oh yes, there was a problem with that.
Maybe do it at one of the schools that the kids can actually understand what it means.
We had representation from King David. Funny enough, that's great. I'll take all the suggestion on board.
Well, we'll talk about it further. But obviously West Park is the most appropriate place.
Well, we got the memorial there. And I'll tell you, there was another funeral over there. There were thousands and thousands of people who attended that funeral. I think people have to make the effort. These guys made the effort to go and serve the country.
I hear that also.
I take what you say on board.
But either way, it needs to be publicized. At least let people make a choice.
I think that's what the problem was.
If people don't know about it, they're not even making a choice.
I don't think we've pushed it.
Right. So very important, and certainly it's something that is worth following.